Hi guys. Hope everyone is doing okay today. It's Sunday afternoon. It's beautiful outside, nice and cool. It's been really hot lately, so it's nice not being so sweaty all the time. I was listening to a lecture yesterday while I was doing my dishes, and it sparked some things I thought to be awful helpful in the stages of recovery where you're trying to let go of the idea that you can help an abusive partner, help them have better self-esteem so that they are not jealous or mean or feeling insignificant, which is the basis and rooting foundation of that controlling, jealous demeanor that they take on. I also felt this to be important to introduce that, you know, the focus on your own self-esteem, your own self-worth, rather than focusing on them all of the time. Because when you are with an abusive partner, it is about them all of the damn time. And I think that's kind of step one after leaving, or actually it's step one in deciding to leave too, is putting the focus back on yourself. So let's go over some basic kind of psychology of self-esteem, self-concept, what those are, how to get them, and how we do not get them. To clarify, why fixing your partner isn't going to work, even if you're, you know, a psych nurse, psychology, psychiatry bookworm, and why fixing yourself is going to work, right? So I'm going to try to teach you how to feel better in this episode. So, crash course on feeling better. Okay. One of the things that stood out to me when I listened to that lecture and that professor presenting yesterday was the concept that self-esteem is built and developed by the self, right? That's the name of it, self-esteem, especially in adulthood. In childhood, self-esteem is partially influenced by caregivers and the way, you know, they tend to our needs and the way they treat us, our environment, what type of energy we grow up in. And self-esteem can certainly be affected by an abusive person. But did you know that we are actually unable to change someone else's self-esteem for them? We cannot change someone else's self-esteem. They have to do it from within. So let that sit there for a minute within you. Now, positivity and being someone's cheerleader can help self-esteem if you have the fuel to do so. If your tank's not on empty and you have that fuel, and you have the correct relationship to do so. So the right boundaries, the right setting, right? So not someone who takes out that emotional weapon every other day and decides to cut you deep while you're trying to build them up or make them feel better. That would not be the correct situation. You know, you can really be of aid to somebody in replenishing their self-esteem if they respect you. If they don't respect you, they A, don't deserve your positivity and cheerleading and energy, and B, it simply won't reach them. It won't. So what it really comes down to is, unless this person is actively aware and is on a personal journey to improve the way they feel and are actively in the role of working on their self-esteem, which means what? They must have insight, like I covered in my last episode. Right? What does insight look like in this situation? Insight would look like, I am aware I have low self-esteem and that it's causing a problem in my relationships and in my behavior. It's causing me to be jealous and controlling and act poorly towards my partner. That's what someone with insight would look like in this situation and would need to look like for your positivity towards them to even reach them correctly. If it does not look like that, and it looks more like this, you're the problem. You are always making me feel like shit. You are always causing me to feel upset and bad about myself. I treat you the way I do because of the way you act towards me. I feel insecure because I know X, Y, and Z, right? Notice what a lot of those sentences started with, which are ones that I used to hear all the time. You, blame, blame, blame. Okay, so this person does not have insight that they're the problem. So then all of your compliments and sweet thoughts about them and energy to make them feel better, all that is going to do is put a temporary band-aid on their ego and give them their supply of feel good, which is nothing permanent. I promise. Their need for admiration due to having close to no sense of self-esteem, no positive self-esteem, having a very different persona than what's really going on inside, right? They have this confident outer persona, but what does their inner persona look like? It's not good. They don't feel good about themselves. And I think when we're in these relationships, we actually do get to see that side of them quite often. They have no self-esteem. And they have that need for admiration, you know, with zero insight and zero intention of working on any of it. And it's an endless pit. It's a black hole. It turns your light and your love for them every day into burnt fuel to continue their narcissistic road trip, and leaves you what? Feeling drained. Now your tank's on empty. So if someone is in the process of actively building better self-esteem, so this would be the opposite situation, compliments and positive reinforcement can help minimally. But actually the best thing that can be done for someone in this process is to model and exude your own self-esteem to help another person build their own back up. When I started spending time with some of the women my ex was involved with, I have relationships with a few of them, it struck me, you know, they kind of would say things like, one of them told me one time, I feel more self-confident around you because you say it how it is and I know you're not ashamed of anything. And, you know, it's like, sure, do I tell them how wonderful I think they are when they're having a rough day? Of course I do. Of course I do. They deserve that care. You know, they have insight and they're trying to rebuild their self-esteem. So I don't mind putting a little bit of energy into them when they're having a bad day. But I've noticed I'm actually more helpful when I'm just modeling healthy behavior, when I'm exuding my own self-confidence and kind of teaching the people around me, hey, I don't give a fuck what you think of me, and I know I'm worthy and honest and caring, and I have zero to prove to anyone. I find when I am in a place, you know, where that's my aura, it rubs off on people around me who are also trying to help themselves. Do you know what it does to people who are not? It intimidates them, right? It aggravates them even. So I want you to think about this. If you just do you and you water your own garden and you build your own mental health up to a place of stability, positivity, and wellness, that can help others more than constantly spending your energy on making everyone else feel better before, you know, focusing on making you feel better, right? And it also shows you in big old yellow highlighter who is not worth your time, who is not worth your thoughts and energy in trying to help them based on those two reactions, right? What are those two reactions going to be? Either, hey, I like, you know, what you're doing with yourself and bettering yourself, and that makes me feel better and helps me stay on track with focusing on myself too. I like how your life is going, right? So modeling that behavior. And then the other reaction is going to be it intimidates them and it aggravates them, you know? So that's helpful too. Pay attention to those reactions. Something I learned that was very important, you know, through my time in learning to be an addiction recovery nurse is I can only help people who want to be helped. They do have to do 90% of the work to get well. I can offer them, you know, that 10% as a support person. And that's really it. So, you know, all of this and some reflection on all of this made me think about how I used to kind of quiet my achievements and make myself smaller and less noticeable to try and help my ex-partner's self-esteem, or so I thought that's what I was doing. I'd find myself feeling bad when he was feeling like a failure, and I was, you know, and I was feeling proud of myself. This was, you know, kind of in the early stages of our relationship, because I'll tell you, by just a few months in, he had gotten me to the point of actually having very low self-esteem. He saw that section of me that was still needing work in the esteem department and totally exploited it and took advantage of it. He knew exactly which parts of me to break down that were a little bit more weak than the stronger parts, by making me not feel good enough, you know, mostly through the infidelity and also the jealousy he was experiencing. You know, that at the time kind of felt justified. You know, the criticism on his end towards me, and that I was doing something wrong by someone telling me, you know, I was doing something wrong if someone came up to me and said I'm beautiful, or thanking me for helping them, or me doing well at something and he did not, you know. He just had me in this pity party mode for him. And I saw him do this to other people as well. Some examples I could think of is he, you know, he'd call someone weird if they were different than him, or he'd call someone whipped by their, you know, girl who was acting faithfully or spending more time with their partner than him. If he didn't understand someone's feelings, he'd call them stupid, including me, or needy. Yeah, he loved that one. So I think one of the very important things we as the person experiencing emotional abuse needs to understand and see clearly to move on is that we are not able to make the abuse stop or help the abuser feel better by elevating their self-esteem. That's not the quick fix. That's just not even possible. And we certainly should never minimize ourselves to make them feel bigger. You know, let them belittle us. That's their job, to build themselves up, not ours. And the issue with them is they won't take the time or effort, or even admit that they need to do it themselves. So they use people to make them feel bigger, through exploitation and, you know, deflecting, breaking you down, and playing puppet master with emotions, you know, to get their needs met. And that's really all it is, you know. They're just trying to get their needs met too, but they do it in a very unhealthy way, that hurts people. So, you know, I used to think, oh, well, he's just very self-conscious and actually can't see how handsome he is or how smart, you know, he is. He doesn't give himself enough credit. So I'd try to be what he needed, kind of from his mom in childhood, and be that encouraging figure, you know, the self-esteem builder for him. And it really didn't strike me all the way until, you know, in therapy, my therapist made a good point to me that was helpful. She said, Jen, you can't be the mother to him he never had. You know, not a healthy headspace or job to assign yourself, so remove it. And that was pretty freeing for me, you know. So you can't replace the support and love your adult partner needed from his mother or whoever else in childhood. It's already disordered. This is something he will need to seek treatment for, usually counseling at least. And most importantly, it's something he will need to understand and then proceed to you know, rebuild himself on his own, because it's a self concept issue, right? Again, listen to the name, self concept, self esteem. Not outside environment or partner developed esteem, self-esteem. It must be given to oneself. So I think, you know, I'll point something else out too, that this will click for you when you rebuild your own self-esteem after they've destroyed it, and it'll be better than the original one you had. It will be much more durable, I promise you. But even just rebuilding your own self-esteem will help you understand that you can help them. It's something that, it's work that has to be done with yourself. Now, what is the best thing you can do for these folks? It's not make yourself smaller or quieter, less noticeable, less attractive, as to not harm their ego. Again, it's the opposite. You stand firm in your own confidence, and you can be kind about it. I've learned to be much, you know, much softer and encouraging, with boundaries, of course, but you know, you don't have to be harsh about it. That's something I've worked on, you know, recently. I've shared with my ex-abusive partner, hey, this relationship I participated in with you, totally broke me and took away my spirit and voice and self-esteem. These are the things I did to get them back and improve them. You ought to try it. Maybe. I think you'd feel much better. You know, when he comes crying about stuff versus, oh, you know, this is what it was before. Oh, you're so wonderful. Oh, don't feel that way about yourself. Oh, you know, making excuses or just trying to build them up with that, you know. Nope, it goes like this now. I hear you expressing you don't feel good and that you would like to feel better. This is what I recommend you try. It worked for me. The end. That's all you get. And again, you know, you don't even want to spend like a whole lot of energy on all that. So especially if you're newly out, just you don't even talk to them. But that's kind of what the narrative looks like for me now. So I'll give you a list of things that have really helped me a lot. What has helped me build my self-esteem and helped me, you know, feel my self-worth. That's a set of three things I feel are most important. So I'll go over those. One is achieving goals. And I swear by this, it's the number one self-esteem booster. Now I'm going to put my little nurse hat on right now and explain what a SMART goal looks like. This is the model we use to plan treatment goals for patients, but I think it's really helpful to kind of help you construct goals and have it have this effect. So SMART is an acronym, you know, and it stands for, this goal needs to be specific. It needs to be measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. This is a great structure to use when making goals for yourself. And I kind of started learning this right when I was getting into the thick of some very heavy abuse in my first semester of school. So let me map out a goal plan that was SMART for me, right? And all those things I just listed: specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, timely. So while still in the relationship, if you're still in the relationship and you're thinking about leaving, a goal can look like, this week I will stand up for myself if he tries to start an argument and call me names or criticize me. I will say to myself, he's not right. Okay, so this week, right? So we're setting a timeline, and I feel like that's a realistic goal. Even if you don't engage one time, because how many arguments a week do you have with these people? Lots. I'm going to tell you, if you can just do this for yourself one time with one of those arguments, goal met. You do that one time for yourself this week. You can mark off on your piece of paper. I encourage you to write them down, because there's a psychological effect to listing things and then getting to write goal met at the end of it when you reach that goal. A goal 1 week after leaving the person, that can look like, I'm not going to talk to him for 2 days straight. How am I going to accomplish this? I'm going to distract myself. If my phone goes off, I'm going to go on a walk instead and leave my phone in my dresser. I'm going to tell someone I'm struggling to not talk to him and give them my phone so I don't re-engage with him. All right? 2 days, 48 hours, you can do that. Goal met. Okay? Get a support system in place. Now, I say 2 days because once you get to the end of those 2 days, then we can make it 5 days and so on. Because making a goal of I am never going to talk to him again is what? Probably unrealistic and unattainable at the point that you're in that space. And that's how we create low self-esteem, is when we set goals outside of what we're capable of at the time. So this is something, this is a tool I wanted to share because this is how we can be kind to ourselves when we set realistic goals that we can meet at the state that we're in. Okay. Okay, I went 2 days. Write it down, goal met. Another goal that is good to set early on is something like, every day for the next week, I'm going to practice gratitude. I think that gratitude is so helpful. At the beginning of the day and at the end of the day, I am going to say or write down something I am thankful for. I encourage you to write them down, actually, because then you can look back and you can see the transition. And that's helpful, you, when you can see your growth on paper. It'll be interesting to read, you know, those. Mine looked like, I'm thankful to not be arguing today, right? I'm thankful to sit and drink a cup of coffee by myself today. And then, you know, kind of progressively it went to, I'm thankful to not feel so anxious today. My anxiety started to subside. Even just like a week out, I was not feeling as anxious from not arguing, not being put down, not being scared, you know. I'm thankful to feel calm and not scared today was one of them I wrote down. I'm thankful to not be called names today. You know, this will do things for you. This will do things to your brain, seeing that and putting that down and just recognizing it. Gratitude's very helpful. A goal for 1 month out. Okay, so a month out. A little bit of time's gone by. We're starting to kind of get in the groove. Probably still pretty heavily depressed and sad, but starting to feel better. A goal for a month out can look like, I am going to read one chapter of a self-help book this week. Goal met. Now, I wouldn't put that in the first week because you may not have the energy to. You know, my first couple weeks out, I could hardly get out of bed. I really just had to take care of myself. You know, eat, drink water, get enough sleep, get support, you know. I couldn't read a book, so that wouldn't be appropriate for my first week out. It's more appropriate for 1 month out. That's the realistic and attainable side. Another month out goal could be something like, I am going to take myself to yoga twice this month. More if I want to, but I'm going to set the goal for twice this month. So once every 2 weeks. All right, goal met. And then if you want to start bumping it up to once a week, you can do that. And then twice a week, you can do that. But go easy on yourself. Go slow. Another one could be, I'm going to spend time with myself and do something nice for myself 1 week into this month. Goal met. A goal I also set for myself, which I continue, is anytime I have contact with him, I will tell my mom. My mom's my safe person, my godmom. Or a trusted, supportive friend. I have a few friends who I really trust in that space. And I think this promise to yourself and this goal is really a very important one for safety, so that people in your life know what's going on, and two, because it gets you out of that slippery slope of hiding what's going on when you're doing that. So no more double life, right? You must take a vow to live honestly yourself, and you can do it. And if you don't have a family member or a friend that will not shame you for having contact with the person when you do that, find a support group of survivors or a therapist that will. You have to have that support and understanding, you know, because if you get shame, then that doesn't feel good. And then that's why we hide it, right? So we need to find that source of support that's accepting and understanding so that we can hold ourselves accountable in a space that's emotionally safe for us. Other than this goal, other than the goal setting and achieving, you know, the feel good that that creates, it creates accountability within ourselves to heal from the addictive nature of these relationships. Okay. So other things that build self-confidence are using your voice. That's the second thing I recommend. You know, talk about it. Begin to talk about it. Use your voice to say what has happened and that it's wrong or that it hurts. Support groups are a great place to start because it's all people in the same situation as you. Very, very safe place to share. You know, they understand, and then you will have affirmation and confidence to go on and tell other people in your life. And if you receive negativity or blame from them, you will have your support group in your back pocket going, they haven't been through it. They don't quite get it. It's not my job to make them understand. You know, I believe you. I went through it. I got your back. So kind of just navigating support is important too. I would encourage you to kind of lean away from people who make you feel bad about not leaving sooner or just any of that. No blaming. But beginning to have a voice again is huge and feeling better again. The third thing that I recommend is I'm going to choose me every day. Just taking that stance. I'm going to choose me every day. This starts small too, just like the goals. So something like, today I'm going to make dinner and I'm going to make what I would like to eat versus what everyone else in my house would like to eat. I'm going to do that for myself tonight. I will make everybody else a box of macaroni and cheese, or better yet, I'll volunteer one of the other members in my household to make the box of mac and cheese if that's what they want to eat instead of what I want to eat, and I'm going to make what I want to eat. Moms have a horrible habit of always putting their needs and desires on the back burner. So do survivors of abuse. Other ways to choose you are making time for yourself every day. Every day, do something that you want to do. Go for a run. Go for a walk. You know, quiet time to drink that cup of coffee in silence. Or sit on the porch and drink that cup of tea in silence. To watch a movie or show that you want to watch. Y'all don't want to watch it? Go in another damn room. You deserve to have time to yourself and to enjoy yourself. Right? So small things like that that used to feel selfish, you kind of need to flip that switch and start telling yourself, you know what, I deserve an hour or two of a TV show that I want to watch. I deserve to have a meal that sounds good to me, even if it doesn't sound good to everybody else, you know? So start with things like that. Then it gets bigger. I'm going to take myself on a vacation this weekend with my girlfriends. I'm going to go on that trip that I got invited on. I'm not going to feel bad about it. I'm going to go enjoy myself. I'm going to buy that dress that looks good on me and makes me feel good. You know, it's okay to spend that money on me, right? I'm going to enroll in that class this semester. I'm going to do that for myself. And then I'm going to make sure that I have time to myself every week to get my homework done to be successful in that class. And I'm just going to kind of let everybody around me know, hey, this is what I'm doing, you know. It would be nice if you could be supportive of me, and if you're not, then you kind of need to keep it to yourself, because that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm going to go spend the day with my friends or with myself and let my kiddo spend the day with grandma. I deserve that time alone once in a while. I deserve that time to unwind and rest. I deserve to set bigger goals for myself. The narrative will change from I deserve to I'm just going to do that shit because I want to. and it feels good. Okay. The other element of self-esteem I'd like to discuss is standing up for yourself and your well-being, which relates to all of this. Once you allow yourself to start healing and you begin to shift the focus from everyone else, your abusive partner specifically, and start focusing on you, you will begin to notice who is good for you and who is not so good for you. Today I'm going to choose to not go to this get-together because so-and-so will be there and I don't enjoy their company. They're rude, sometimes to me, and I don't have to tolerate that, right? Whereas before, you would go to that get-together out of obligation. Not anymore. Other days it may be, I'm going to go today, but if so-and-so comes, you know, up to me with some nonsense that is not necessary and doesn't honor my spirit and well-being, I'm going to say to them, I don't appreciate that. I don't deserve that. I'm going to choose to not spend time around you now and either migrate away from them or leave the event, whatever feels best. And this type of interaction does not have to be hostile or explosive. Just say it the way it is and, you know, be very matter of fact. Like I said before, you can even be kind about it. You don't have to be rude, but you're protecting your well-being by making choices like that. So live your life for you. Enjoy your life with you. Be around people who treat you with respect and make you feel good. Do not tolerate disrespect or put-downs. Call people on it. And if they don't stop, don't have a relationship with them. Even if they're family. You know, put hard limits on it. I did this a lot my first few months out of my abusive relationship. The chopping block was on the table and I cleared my world of energy that wasn't for me. And I can't tell you how much better that made me feel. So when you combine those three things that I just went over, right? Setting and achieving goals, self-care and exercising self-respect by not tolerating mistreatment, then that self-confidence is going to bloom so beautifully. People will start to comment on it. They will. You will become unstoppable. And I'm not going, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I don't have bad days because I do. I totally do. But in the big picture, my self-narrative is, yes, I can. And I'm not scared of that versus what if I fail or I should stay where it's safe and predictable. Big shift. Very helpful. Makes me feel a lot better. Has made me feel a lot better. All right. Let's talk about perception and blame a little bit. Now that we have cleared out the thoughts that we should be focusing on the other person to fix them and know now that that's their job, we have no part in it, and it's okay to stop giving them our energy and our time, right? And we're releasing all of that. I kind of want to go over some other things, what to expect, you know, when you choose you. You know, you can expect a daily improvement. Some days are good, some days are bad, and then it's weird, progressively all of a sudden you will start to feel really good mostly. I think the best thing I've gained from healing is being okay being alone. I used to dread being alone and thought, like, you know, especially when I was trying to leave him, I've shared, you know, in this series, I tried to leave several times and kept going back, and then I would leave again and go back. And I just thought, you know, I would just shrivel up and die without him paying attention to me, or, you know, thought I would be miserable sleeping alone every night. And it was a transition, you know, when I finally did stay away, it was a transition. It wasn't just like, oh, all of a sudden, yes, I love sleeping alone. You know, with any breakup, right? Like, that's normal. All breakups are hard, you know, they're hard. But trauma bonded ones are harder because they're, you know, they're addictive and you're broken into a million pieces afterwards. I can't tell you how much I love being with just me now. You know, after taking this time to really focus on myself and rebuild myself and go through everything, you know, and doing the work. I love being in my bed alone, totally relaxed and content, being in my space, in my apartment, in my home all by myself, in my own energy. It feels amazing. Like, I look forward to my alone time. You know, it's a very comfortable space for me now. I actually, like, if I'm don't have it for like a few days, like, I actually start craving it. So you can expect to experience that if you kind of stay on this path. You can expect to forgive eventually too and remove blame. They have a hard time with that, right? On the flip side, that's part of not being accountable is blame shifting, which they do a lot of. So always being blamed for the problems in the relationship is like a chronic problem of abusive relationships. When I first left, I was finally able to remove that blame from myself through finding out, you know, the truth on all of the crazy lying and just from getting the hell away from him and our dynamic. You know, he attacked my character daily by the end of it. And when you hear that every single day, you start to believe it, let me tell you. So, you know, I was able to remove the blame from myself that he placed on me daily. I was able to place the blame on him, right? Like, that's helpful. Okay, you need to take this blame. This is actually your doing. Had a few conversations that, you know, were straight up telling him, you know, what it was, what he does to women, how it affects us, that it will, I will not be minimizing it, that I will not ever let him blame me for any of that stuff ever again. But that's only helpful for so long to kind of have that attitude towards it. And after anger subsides and you're able to lift the blame from you and place the blame on them for the abuse, which is where it should go, then you kind of move into forgiveness, not forgetfulness. Don't confuse the two. Forgetfulness is dangerous. That's danger zone. But forgiveness and forgiving releases that negative energy and pain and hurt it caused you to lift and set you free again. Lately for me, it feels like it set me free to love again. You know, took a long time. Took me a long time. And part of removing blame entirely from the situation kind of goes something like this. I grew up how I did, learning to accept abuse unconsciously, right? When you're raised in it, that's just, you think it's normal. And then I re-engaged in it in an adult relationship, which is pretty predictable, you know? And then you grew up the way you did, right? To your partner, and behave the way you do, due to trauma, which you as an adult man need to take accountability for. But I understand where it comes from, right? There's no excuses. You shouldn't be doing it, but I understand where it comes from. But really blaming either of us is not helpful. That's kind of what I've found, you know. So I am choosing to explore and heal from my childhood trauma and my abusive relationship with you. You are choosing to stay in it, reenact it repeatedly and continue to spiral, which is sad. It's sad for me to watch now. You know, and it's okay to have sympathetic feelings towards them, right? Because you're going to get to a spot where, like, you're doing real good and you see them and they're not doing good. They're not. A lot of the time they're doing worse than they were when they were with you, even if they're dating somebody else, right? Even if they're in that relationship that they want everyone to see and buy into, oh yeah, I'm so much better off without them. Look how happy I am now. Like, you see it. You're the same. You're exactly the same. You have exactly the same relationship with them as you had with me. You did not change. You didn't do any of the work. So it's going to be the same. And the older people get, you know, the harder it gets to keep up that fake ass persona and lifestyle, and they start to slip. So it's okay to be sympathetic. You just got to keep it in check. But you know, that's the reality of the situation, and I accept it. And I think the healing stages, like if I could sum it all up for you, have gone something like this for me. Recognize, accept, rise above, model. Okay, those four things. Recognize what is happening to me. Accept that that's the reality. Stop trying to change the outcome. Accept that he is abusive. Rise above the anger. Rise above the pain. Rise above the stigma. Rise above the bullshit. And then finally, you know, model. You model healing. Model positive self-esteem, transparency, self-love, self-worth. That's who you become. That's what people see. That's your authentic self, because you've worked damn hard to get there. I'm finally in a phase where I'm experiencing accepting reality versus romanticizing. You know, when we interact, and that's been helpful for me in this phase of him reaching out and wanting to reconcile and work it out. So, what that looks like for me now is the what if is gone. That's helpful. I know there is no other ending to our situation than what happened. It will not be fixed. So what if goes away when you get healthy and stop second guessing your choice to leave the person, and that what you were experiencing in their mistreatment was real. Not your imagination. Like they were teaching you that that's actually what was going on. So what was reality? Oh, this is what my reality was. Yes, he did cheat habitually. Yes, he did lie about a lot. He lied to me every day. Yes, I was feeling belittled and wounded because you were treating me poorly. Yes, I felt anxious because I knew something was very wrong, even though you hid it and were able to talk your way out of it, talk your way out of what you were doing to me, etc., etc., right? Romanticizing used to look like this. He didn't mean it. He didn't mean it. I know he loves me. Reality is, yes, he did mean it, and you have to accept that even though it hurts. So, if you listen to the romanticizing episode, I have a whole episode on that in season one. Remember, romanticizing is an involuntary defense mechanism against trauma that our minds produce. It helps it hurt less. It helps the trauma hurt less. This is the basis of Stockholm Syndrome. That's something else you should look into if you've not learned about Stockholm Syndrome yet. So I am out of that. My mind is no longer needing to romanticize this man, what he did to me, or alter the situation to not have it hurt as much, because I have been away from him and I have healed, and I am able to accept the truth without it taking me down or making me feel less than. It has nothing to do with me. That's his shit, right? My perception is healthy now. Another example I could give you, romanticizing what that would look like. He'll change and stop doing this to me if he really loves me. I know he really loves me. He tells me so every day. Reality now sounds like he can't change on his own. He needs help that I can't give him. Much like a, you know, a 12-step program for a drinker. He may want to change, but his willingness to change is not strong enough yet to act on it, because if it was, he would have done it. All right. So we'll kind of wrap up there. I hope that's helpful for you guys. And I encourage you to try that exercise, you know, all of it. Set some goals for yourself. Practice that self-care. And just stay in positive energy. Don't go around people who don't understand you. And, you know, I think at first when you first leave, you know, you're in your most vulnerable state. And it's just so sensitive. It's a sensitive wound. It's bleeding. It's fresh. And you really need time and space, you know, from anything that's going to, like, aggravate that, to let it heal. So if that means kind of pulling back from family and friends who don't always like know what to say, or they say the wrong things and it hurts. You know, not, I'm not saying necessarily like cut off all your relationships, but what you could even do, like if you're in that fresh phase, is just simply say to them, I don't feel like you understand, and that's okay. So I'm going to take some time to rest and care for myself during this time. And, you know, I can, you know, talk with you again or hang out with you again when I'm feeling a little bit better. And, you know, when I have a little bit clearer of a head to kind of do this with you. You know, and then I think as time goes on, like I said, and like I went over in this episode with everything, you'll start to realize who's good for you and who's bad for you. And, you know, just clear out that junk, you know, quality, not quantity. So happy healing. I hope this helps. I hope you feel better, and I wish you rest and replenishment. Much love. Till next time, guys.